Good morning, Charlottesville. This is Real Estate Matters with Michael Guthrie. Welcome to Saturday morning. Hope your weekend's off to a great start. As many of you are aware, and if you're not aware of it, then gosh, you've either been on vacation or you just don't care or these things don't matter. Whatever it might be, most of us are aware that this is these last few weeks have been very, very interesting at Capitol Hill as it related to raising the debt ceiling. And on Tuesday, they finally got it done. Whether that's a good definition of it or not, you have to kind of wonder with what the agreement was, did anything get really done? But I have the privilege of having Ed Burton on the show with us this morning. Many of you have heard Ed either on this radio show or talking at the Senior Center or talking at the university or at any sort of sporting event or lunch with students. I mean, he's everywhere around Charlottesville, but he has a really interesting and I think unique look at what's going on with our country as it relates to the economy. And Ed, I really appreciate you joining me. I know you're up in D.C. at the Legg Mason tournament. Are you doing broadcast back here for the guys here so that they know what's going on?
Hi, Michael. It's good to talk to you. I am in Washington, D.C. In fact, I'm going to go over to the Legg Mason tournament. Somdev Devarman is playing today. He's playing against Grenelmeyer in the first round. And I'm covering that story for the Daily Progress. So look for my article tomorrow.
Yeah, well, hopefully
it gets done in time to meet a deadline.
Hopefully when we do this, finish this recording and it airs on Saturday, maybe Somdev will have moved forward a couple more rounds from there. That would be awesome if he could have experienced some success up there. It's got to be, I mean, it's hot here. I'm sure it's really miserable there as well.
It's pretty toasty here. I think Somdev's going to do good. I think by the time you air this show, he'll have won two rounds, matter of fact.
Oh, that's great. Well, as we all know, Congress passed this thing last night. The Senate passed it at noon today. The president has signed it. Your initial take on raising the debt ceiling, did anything really get done after all the weeping and gnashing of teeth? Where do you think this leaves us?
Well, interestingly enough, I think there weren't many surprises. First of all, it was not a surprise that they reached an agreement. I think the big surprises were all the political theater that went along with it. It wasn't really a crisis as these things go. There was never any doubt that we could pay our interest payments. The default was never in question. Even if they hadn't extended the debt ceiling, there was no question about a default. Why people use that expression, I'm not sure. Secondly, there was never any threat to Social Security payments for a mechanical reason. It has to do with the way the Social Security Trust Fund is counted within the national debt. So there was never any doubt Social Security payments would be made. There was never any doubt, even if they didn't get to agreement, there was never any doubt that the interest on U.S. Treasuries were going to be paid, was going to be paid. So the only doubt was how the final deal would come down. And that was interesting because you had one side pushing for higher taxes and you had another side pushing to try to get some entitlement reform, that is, reform to Social Security and Medicare. Neither side succeeded in that. Taxes are not going to be raised under the agreement, and Social Security and Medicare are really essentially untouched by the agreement. So, in essence, not much happened.
When we look at this thing, and I've listened to you talk in the past, and I thought it was quite interesting, listening to, and not just any media source, almost all the media sources, you never heard what you just said over the last couple minutes in regards to the default and the Social Security. It was always, you know, this is the end of life as we know it. These things are going to happen. My grandmother, you know, is not going to get her check, you know, that kind of thing. And there just weren't that many people that were out there refuting that. And it's amazing to me how these things can get out there and not be sort of correctly explained.
I was surprised also because people familiar with how the national debt is calculated, the $14.3 trillion, less than $10 trillion of that are U.S. securities. There's roughly around $4.5 trillion that is the majority of which is the Social Security Trust Fund, which is just an accounting figment. of everybody's imagination. And then there are another $2 trillion of securities held by various agencies of the U.S. government. So there was never really any doubt that Social Security payments could be made. And why that story wasn't made clear, I don't know. Part of it is President Obama, unfortunately, speculated on the possibility of not making Social Security payments. That was not a good move on his part because it simply wasn't true. There was no doubt that Social Security payments would be made strictly because of the existence of the so-called Social Security Trust Fund. So the way that works is if you need to pay $100 billion in Social Security payments, all you do is reduce the Social Security Trust Fund by $100 billion and sell $100 billion worth of securities. There's no change in the national debt when you do that. None. No change at all. So Social Security payments could have been made without changing the level of the national debt.
Well, you know,
so
you
it really was never really an issue.
You look at the situation, and obviously when you look at compromise means that nobody is ever perfectly happy with what happened. But I do find it interesting, as you've already shared, that there revenue sources, you know, higher taxes is not a part of this thing. And dealing with the entitlements, I was listening to you the other morning, and I thought it was very interesting when you said the whole pressure on our debt rating has nothing to do with the debt ceiling going up. It has to do with the fact that we're not doing anything to fix it. And
this agreement permits our national debt to increase from the current level, $14.5 trillion, to over $20 trillion in 3 years. And within 8 or 10 years, you're going to be staring at $25 to $30 trillion. So the problem, that's the real problem, not whether or not you extend or increase the debt ceiling. The real problem is, and it's basically entitlements, it's Social Security and Medicare. What would have been a complete home run for everybody is if they had simply pushed the age of eligibility out a couple of years. If they'd pushed the age of eligibility out, say, on Social Security from 65 to 67 as the starting baseline, and move the age of eligibility on Medicare out a year or two for people who, say, are currently 55 years or less, if they'd done that, you would have had major, major savings in the future on the national debt. And it seems to me everyone agrees on that. Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives, I think, all agree that we need to move the age of eligibility out for people who are 55 years or less in age. Why we don't just enact that? And part of the problem is if you put it off 2 or 3 years, then it doesn't have the same kind of salutary effect on the national debt. The problem is the national debt is simply growing too fast.
And before we go to break, and then we can kind of talk about some practicalities, and we talk about that age of eligibility, for folks 55 or less and just extending it out. I mean, obviously that makes great sense because even that people don't understand when they start talking about entitlements. You know, you read on Facebook, you listen, you know, hear on Twitter, you listen on the radio, people screaming about the fact that I've put into this thing for 64 years and now you're going to take it away from me. Well, that's never been there. I mean, that those folks are going to get their checks. It's about extending it out to folks who aren't there yet. Am I correct on that?
You are, except that if you don't extend it now, let's suppose you don't come to an agreement to extend the age now, then in 5 or 6 years, you'll be cutting payments for people who are already collecting Social Security, and you'll be cutting payments for Medicare recipients. It's just the numbers.
Yeah.
So it matters whether you extend the age limit now or do it 5 years from now. Doing it 5 years from now, you're going to really hurt a lot of people who are already collecting at that point because you've got the entire baby boomer generation now coming into these systems.
Yeah,
you've got a
I'm just
large
thinking
number
for myself
of people right behind them. So you really need to take that action right now.
Yeah, it's a little scary for me because as I start doing the math 5 or 6 years from now, I'm going to be one of those people they're cutting because I'll be at that age. And that's a scary thought.
You and me both. And I think they also ought to I think they really should means test it. I mean, I really think Warren Buffett shouldn't be getting Social Security. And I think people who are elderly tend to be a little bit wealthier on average than the average worker who's paying into that system. And I think those who truly do have a lot of income and resources should not be getting the full Social Security.
Well, and again, the age of eligibility, you know, thankfully, I mean, it's not true for all of us, but you know, our lifespan is growing. We're able to do things in a healthier manner for later on in life, and therefore we work longer, which means we don't need to have that as soon as it's been in the past. So that's another thing.
Right, Michael. It depends on what you do. If you're a coal miner, well, I don't know if that argument applies.
Right.
But if you are in the service industries generally, you should think about working more years. You don't necessarily have to do the same job you've always done. You might do something different. But all of us need to face the fact that we can't retire as early as we thought. No one in the Western world can do that. We're seeing it in Europe. People are used to retiring way too early, and their countries can't afford it. And keep in mind who's going to end up paying for all this. It's our children and grandchildren who are trying to raise families, who might have two or three kids, who have an average income. They're the ones that are saddled with all these payments to support those of us who are going into these age groups, and that's not fair. That's just not fair for folks who are trying to raise a family, trying to support their children, to be stuck with these massive payments. So we need to move those age of eligibilities out, and we need to do it right now.
Well, and interesting too that I've read a number of different studies that show that that people that stop working, if they haven't found something to do that's going to make them significant, that they feel like they've got a reason for living and things, there's a collaboration and that says that person doesn't live as long, and if they're working and enjoying what they're doing, they have tendency to have a longer lifespan. So it's just another reason to look at that. Well, we're going to take a break and let New American Mortgage and Classic Furniture share with you the wonderful things that they do, and after the break we'll be back with Ed Burton here on News Radio 1070, and we'll talk practicalities as to what this means and what people can expect in the near future. Welcome back to Real Estate Matters. I'm Michael Guthrie, and you're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA Saturday morning. We're grateful to have you here on this Saturday morning. Hope your weekend is off to a good start. Speaking with Ed Burton, and we're talking about this whole raising of the debt ceiling and what it means and the fact that there's lots of work still left to be done as it relates to trying to find a way to reduce the debt versus continue to raise the debt ceiling. As always, folks, you can grab this podcast at the Monday or Tuesday of next week. Go to facebook.com/realestatematters, and we'll post the podcast there. You can go to wina.com and click on podcasts and then click on Real Estate Matters. And you can find the podcast there as well. But as I said, we're here with Ed Burton. He's up watching Somdev and others playing in the Legg Mason tournament. And we're pre-recording this show. It's Tuesday, the day that the president has signed the new Debt Ceiling Act. And grateful to have Ed on the show. Ed, as we think about what's happening and that there's lots of work to do, and if some things don't get fixed, we're going to be in even more trouble come 4 or 5 years from now. As it relates to real estate and particularly mortgage interest rates, what do you see happening here in the near future and beyond?
Well, in the near future, I think for the next 16 months, say to 24 months, I think mortgage rates are going to stay pretty low, meaning in the 4.5% to 5.5% for residential mortgages. I think that's where it stays. Longer run, I don't know. Longer run, we could have some problems because of the aftermath of QE2 and things like that. But for a while, I think mortgage rates will be attractive for home buyers. And in fact, home prices are an awful lot more attractive for home buyers than they were, say, 2 years ago. For home sellers, it may be a tough environment. But for home buyers, it's actually a pretty good environment.
And as you look at that, I mean, it's interesting because there's nothing to show. I mean, some people had talked about, you know, interest rates beginning to creep up, but and I was thinking that we might begin to see that by the end of the year. But now it looks like, that things are going to stay fairly, fairly constant, a little blip up, a little bit down, but pretty much in the same place.
There's a reason for that, Michael, and it's not a good reason. Just look at the growth in the economy. The economy grew at an annual rate of 0.9% in the first half this year. That's a terrible economic growth rate.
Right.
It's just for recovery. For recovery, you would like to see numbers like 6-7%, because we're still at very high unemployment levels. We're still at very high capacity underutilization type numbers. So you'd like to see 5, 6, 7% growth. At the very least, you'd like to see the long-run trend for the economy, which is more like 3 to 3.25%. But instead, you're seeing just terrible numbers, numbers that suggest strongly that the unemployment rate actually is going to rise as we go into the second half of the year. So while housing is attractive to buy and interest rates are pretty low, you still got a lot of unemployment out there, and I don't know that it's going to go away very soon. Now, in our own area in Charlottesville, we have very low unemployment, as you know.
So as you look at that, and here's my question, you know, the government keeps on talking about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and sort of removing their hand from that, from, you know, keeping the interest rates down and allowing private sector to come in and be a part of making those interest, you know, taking the interest rates versus the government and subsidizing them. But with what you just said, it seems like to me that the government's saying this is where we want to go, but that ain't going to happen anytime soon. And that's what's going to keep that interest rate down at a level that's palatable to everybody. Am I correct with that sort of thought process?
Well, I think the rates will stay down quite independent of Fannie and Freddie and the other government mortgage players, just because the economy is weak. And the economy is probably going to stay weak for a year or two. I don't see a real quick turnaround, because the reason people aren't hiring has a lot to do with microeconomic considerations. It's not purely just an aggregate demand situation. It's a whole lot more expensive to have an employee today than it was 10 or 15 years ago. There are so many more litigation threats when you have employees. There's so many more mandated things from government at all levels, not just the federal level, but state and local mandates apply as well. So employees are very expensive, and our competitors internationally don't have these same kind of rules. If you call China and Brazil and large parts of Asia, they don't have any of these things to contend with, not to mention they don't have the big entitlement programs. They don't have hardly any entitlement programs at all. But they have very few mandates of the kind that we are very prone to have. And particularly, they don't, practically no place else in the world has as much litigation anxiety. I remember going to a special session I have to do at the University of Virginia, where the University of Virginia shows what their potential litigation is from employees' sort of misbehavior. And it turns out, if I am in a bar on a Saturday night — I don't go to bars, by the way, but let's just imagine,
let's just
for
assume
a moment
that you did —
and I insult another employee at the University of Virginia, and off hours, not even during employment, University of Virginia is liable.
Wow.
And of course, the University of Virginia knows that. That's how I learned about it, by going to their special sessions on what their liabilities are. Well, so are ordinary businesses. And the threat of litigation, when for a variety of real and sometimes not so real causes, is a big deal. So that even if an employee is willing to work for you for nothing, Michael, there are all these other costs that our competitors globally don't have, and we used to not have all those other costs if you go back 15, 20 years. So it was very easy to get to full employment absent those kind of costs. Now it isn't. So there are a lot of micro considerations, not to mention all the regulations that the government has put in place. How do you cost all those out? And what's happened is it's discouraged people from hiring employees. So businesses tend to substitute capital for labor. They outsource wherever they can. We've simply made the American worker too expensive. And the sad thing is, the American worker's not getting that in his wages.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that I want to do just in the last couple of minutes of the show — I'm talking with Ed Burton here at News Radio 1070 WINA — is I have this thought in that and what you're just talking about with employment makes perfect sense, but I also think that there are companies out there that have had a little bit of, you know, success here in the last few months. They've got a little stockpile of money, but they don't know what's going to happen 6 months from now. So they're holding on to that just in case things go further south than they already have. And my parallel is, and I just get your thought on this, is it's the same thing as to why people aren't, you know, jumping out and buying a home with low prices, low interest rates, terms that the seller, you know, the buyer's in control. There are folks that are doing okay financially, but they're not willing to kind of jump out and buy that house because they're not quite sure that they're going to have a job 6 months from now. Does that Those two things, are they similar in any way as to what you see?
Yes, yes. There's a lack of confidence and optimism. Some would call it uncertainty, but I think what that uncertainty translates in is fear that the economy is not really recovering and is not going to recover and not quick enough. And there are people that have jobs are scared they're going to lose them, and people that don't have them are desperate to try to get other jobs. And most of what Washington has done the last 3 years is counterproductive, as we see from the aggregate data.
Well, folks, I know that you're really glad you listened to this show this morning. We've given you all sorts of encouraging and optimistic viewpoints.
I don't mean to be that pessimistic, Michael.
I know. But I think it's really important that we look at this thing. And if you are in the place of thinking about buying a home and your job is secure, as Ed said earlier, it is a great time to consider that, because prices are down to 2006 levels, which is where the market began to back away here in Charlottesville. Interest rates remain low. Sellers are, you know, more realistic with their price because they see that we're not coming out of this anytime soon. And so, as we always say, you know, get with somebody you trust. See what your situation is, and if it's the right time, take advantage of what is an extraordinary time of low prices, low interest rates. Ed, I really, really appreciate you being on the show today. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Michael. Enjoyed being here.
And enjoy the tournament. We'll look forward to seeing you when you get back. Folks, our time is up, but we thank you for yours. Have a great weekend,
bye-bye.
Charlottesville.